I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pant Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Listen, go watch the special. Go to my YouTube, subscribe there, check out the special, comment on it, share it, like it. Still almost 700,000 views, even after being taken out of the algorithm. Not taken down. You just got to go search it and find it, and make it a lot harder. That's what's going on. And I just want to thank you guys for supporting the show. We're here at the new studio. We got a lot of new stuff going on. I'm very excited about it. Some things to tell you about. And if you got to have more and you got to have the Patreon, go to the Patreon. It's $5 a month. It's the Honeydew with y'all. And I promise you, it's a cup of coffee. You get hundreds of episodes. And you're never going to hear anything like you heard on that Patreon. All right? You get the Honeydew a day early. You get it ad-free. You get it at no additional cost. It's $5. It's been $5. We've never raised it. All right? So go check it out. And if you sign up for a year, you get a month worth of episodes for free. All right? That's how that goes down. And if you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, go check out my old podcast, The Crab Feast with Jay Larson. I'm telling you, Kirsten will tell you, we're on the road nonstop, and people come up all the time. They're touching my pitch in the crowd. They're yelling, fuck the Crab Feast. It's still a very thriving community. The episodes are great. Go check it out. Subscribe to that. All right. Now, if you want to come see me on tour and I'm in your city when you're there, then let's do it. August 11th here in LA at Flappers. Come out, check out that show. Going to have some special guests on that. August 18th and 19th, Tampa, Florida. September 1st and 2nd, Springfield, Missouri. September 15th and 16th, we're going to be in Tulsa. The 29th and 30th of September is Phoenix. The 27th and 28th of October is Salt Lake City. And December 8th and 9th is San Francisco, California. All right? Those are the dates. Go get all the tickets at ryansickler.com. Now, that's the biz. You know what we do over here. We highlight the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And I am very excited to have this guest on here today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mike Feeney. Welcome to the Honeydew.
Wow, you startled me the way you said that.
Gotta fire it up, bro.
You gotta fire me up, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that moment after lunch on a set and everybody's got that lull. You gotta kick them in the ass a little bit. Yeah.
Just a quick.
You just sit there and listen to that intro. Yeah. It lulls you a little bit.
It did.
I wanted to fire you up.
Yeah, so, you have a very like silky, like maple syrupy voice, you know? It's like I could just kind of sink into a bath of it, you know?
All right. Well, let's get into a bath of that, bro. Will you please, before we begin, plug, promote everything,
Mike? Sure. MikeFeeneyComedy.com for tour dates. I'm going to be at the Algonquin Theater in Manasquan, New Jersey, doing a stand-up and live podcast with my podcast, Here's a Scenario, with Mike Cannon and Brennan Zagalo. We each do stand-up, then we do a live pod at the end. Very fun. I'm also headlining the Den Theater on October 7th in Chicago. So if you're around, please come to that. I have a YouTube special out called Rage Against the Routine. YouTube.com/MikeFeeneyComedy. And I just recorded and I directed and am editing my own, my second comedy special that should be coming out in the next month or two. So we have to, I haven't picked an exact date for that yet. But again, YouTube.com/MikeFeeney and at I Am Mike Feeney across every social media.
All right, you got them all?
That's it. I at one point I was going Mike Feeney here, I am right. Mike Feeney here, and then I just went blanket, you know?
Yeah.
No one's taken I am Mike Feeney, you know?
No.
There is an at Feeney I really wanted to get on Twitter for a while, and then it was an inactive account. I spent years did public, you know, outcry things just as a bit to get people to like report the inactive account so they would delete it. Then they finally deleted it. I mean, I must have posted hundreds of tweets about this thing as a bit over the years. They finally deleted it. And then within 24 hours, somebody from like a bank, like a Prudential bank got it. And then I was like, listen, I reached out. It was like some woman, like, you know. Like,
listen, Mrs. Feeney.
Yeah, I was like,
Kristen, I got to tell you something here,
she's like, Kristen Feeney, come see me at the bank for a loan. And I was like, listen, I don't know if you know the groundswell of work that I've done to get this released and back. So I was like, if you could just. And then she was like, I personally don't care. Let me send you to the corporate thing. And then I reached out to them and they're like, yeah, we're not going to let that go. So
after all that, even though she was willing to,
but she's also like a 50-year-old woman that just, she didn't know what Twitter was, right. You know what I mean? But regardless, so at I am Mike Feeney, keep it simple.
So let me learn a little bit about you.
Yeah.
We hung out before at the store, not long. So where are you from? Tell us a little bit about your background first.
From Long Island, New York, lived in New York City ever since I graduated college, so 2008, and that's when I started doing comedy, and I've been doing it ever since. Live in Queens, got a wife and an 8-month-old kid.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, so that's been a life adjustment. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
But it's great. But yeah, growing up in Long Island, it's like a very, you know, suburbs, but there's the beaches and there's access to New York City, so it feels like a very you always joke the thing in Long Island is people always go, oh, I can go to Manhattan anytime I want because it's, you know, an hour on the train. No one ever goes, you know what I mean? They just talk about going. And then since then, Long Island has gotten more and more like, you know, its own world, you know what I mean? Like their politics have very much changed. People are like hardcore, you know, identity politics with everything now is crazy, but they're like hardcore, like all my friends, you know, we used to listen to like hardcore music and punk music, and we go to concerts now. Everyone drives a Ford F-150 and has chewing tobacco and listens to country music. It's like, you guys live in the suburb, you know what I mean?
In Long Island.
I'm
I wouldn't have guessed
in
that.
In parts of Long Island, it gets very like they're big country music people now. Yeah. They think that they like can identify with like cattle ranch culture and stuff like that.
In Long Island.
So, yeah, yeah. You know, like Bruce Springsteen kind of has this thing of being like, I'm just like a working class, like, you know,
blue collar.
I'm a blue collar. I till the earth with my hands.
Man.
Remember that commercial he come out for, like, I think it was for like Wrangler or Ford, maybe it was during the Super Bowl a couple years ago, where he's like installing like fences on a ranch with his hands. And you're like, dude, you have been one of the most famous people on the planet for 95% of your life. Like, you were a blue-collar guy for, like, 16 years.
Yeah, for 10 seconds.
Ever since then,
you've been... the system, boss.
You've been this elite rich, but now he's just like, I'm just one of you, you know?
Yeah. No, like, you're not. Yeah. You ain't been one of us since you had your motherfucking driver's license, Springsteen. Okay?
And that's why, I don't know why, but I think it's Jersey, New York, but there's this Billy Joel versus Bruce Springsteen thing. They're not even, like, really comparable in terms of their music, but it's a very contentious, like, you either have to love one or the other. And
they should tour together then.
They really, I mean, they would sell out arenas, but I mean, but Billy Joel to me, again, I have a Long Island bias here, but he is just like, talk about like a salt of the earth. You know what I mean? There's no pomp and circumstance. The dude, he just drinks, he drives his car into a tree, walks home. Like, there's no ego there, you know? He's just, I'm a guy. Now he just takes his helicopter from his house right to Madison Square Garden, does his, you know, 9 millionth sold out show, and then takes it right back home. Still pops
on the
in.
Hits.
Yeah. Oh, just he hasn't put, anything since the 90s. It's crazy. I have a joke in my first special about how saying, like, my wife and I's sex life at this point being together so long, it's like going to a Billy Joel concert because we're just playing the hits, no new shit, everybody's happy, you know? That's it, you know? Like, you're never going to go to a Billy Joel concert. He's going to be
Wait, he's doing it earlier than he did it last night. That's the only difference. Exactly. He played this sixth last night.
Oh,
third
the stranger so early.
I mean, you got to love Billy Joel too. In our line of work, what's the line? Closed the shop, sold the house, bought a ticket to the West Coast. Now he gives him a stand-up routine in L.A. Come on.
Yeah. I mean,
that's fucking Billy Joel, bro.
He's just...
He knew what's
and
up.
And he also, like, he pops into local, like, Long Island music venues and just will either, like, be there or sometimes he'll, like, sit in... Like, there's sometimes a Billy Joel cover band will play in Long Island and he'll just go hang out and then he'll, like, jump on stage with them for a couple songs. So, like, people that are seeing a $10 show just happen to see Billy Joel in a 200-seat... It's crazy.
Yeah,
he's just... He's a good dude. I don't know. I have no idea if he's a good dude. I want him to be a good dude.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. So tell me about growing up. You have siblings. Tell me about your parents.
Only child. Product of divorce. Parents got divorced.
What age?
Right in like the I hate everything phase of life. You know, like probably 12, 13. Yeah, adolescent. Just like.
When it's hitting you naturally, even if your parents love each other.
Dude, just rage against the machine and system of a down and just being like angry about everything. And
why did your parents split?
I assume the constant awful fighting that there happened. It was never like anything like physical, but just like screaming. I think they were a little bit like, you know, my dad, my mom is a very like, she's a firecracker. You know what I mean? She's just kind of, I think even after she had the kids, she's like, I still want to go out. I still want to like party and be the life of the thing.
Do you have kids young?
I don't know. They were like about, I think my mom was 28 and my dad was like 31 or something. Like it wasn't, you know, it was for sure.
Teenagers, right?
Yeah, no. But my mom was just kind of like, I like going out. And my dad became a lot more of like a, you know, he was, my dad's like comes from an Irish Catholic family of, you know, of a bunch of siblings where it's like you work and, you know, he's working 80 hour weeks while trying to get a graduate degree while also, you know, raising a kid. So he just was very much like, stay, you know, let's stay home, let's raise the kid. And my mom was like, you know, when I was in elementary school, my mom would take me out like to bars with her.
Really?
I was like, yeah, dude, I was like a kid.
What year is that?
So I was born in 87. So I guess this was like,
yeah, that's later than me. I can't believe you could still do that.
Yeah.
In the early 90s.
I don't know that you could, but we did. There was this Irish bar that we would go to a ton in Long Island, down in Port Jeff. And we would, you know, it was literally a biker bar. Like, it was just an Irish biker bar, that place where it's like, it's dark at 12 and there's people hanging out in the bar. And this is how young I was. You know, those like little like pop shot basketball kind of, they had one of those. I was young enough where they put me inside the cage on the other side of where the balls go down. And I would just be free throwing from 2 feet out while there's like, you
that
know.
That was your playpen while your mom was drinking.
Dude.
That was your fucking playpen, dude.
And to this day.
Do you have a pack and play?
I'm telling you.
That's your pack and play. You got an 8-month old.
I'm telling you, it's my Slumdog Millionaire. I never lose a pop shot to this day, dude. It's like a muscle memory. I know the touch, dude.
Best babysitter ever.
Yeah.
Dude.
And holy so, shit. And like, yeah, dude, it was just a biker bar. And I would, you know, there was some rough crowds in there and stuff. But I remember, my mom tells the story of one time I went up to like, apparently the most standoffish, don't fuck with this biker guy because he's always in a bad mood. Just let him sit at the corner of the bar and drink. And he had like the leather, you know, vest on and all that stuff. And I went up to him and I look at like a kid, you know, I'm a child. And I was like, oh, sir, I was like, you have some, I couldn't even say spaghetti. I said, you have some sketty on your shirt. And then he looked down and I flicked his nose, just flicked his nose. And it was like the record scratched. Everyone was on the edge of their seat, you know? And then he laughed about it. And I was like, oh, all right. Like,
he's killed seven people.
Yeah, yeah, just stomping them. Yeah.
But, all right, so wait, yeah. Hold on. Why is mom hanging out in a biker bar? Is she that type of...
She spent college in Florida. She used to ride Harleys. Okay, so she kind of...
Your mom.
Yeah, my mom.
Dude, you do not look like you come from a Harley mom.
I know. She's got two bikes again. She didn't have...
What's her
like,
name? Is it like
Debbie,
Sharon?
Debbie.
Oh,
yeah.
That's definitely.
So she was very much
What's
like...
up, Debbie?
Yeah. No tattoos either, which is crazy. Wow. I thought she for sure would have got some
a
like...
A lot of denim yeah, and leather and stuff.
A lot of denim. But
this is great, dude. So Debbie comes from a Harley background, like sort of like was her dad or your grandfather or uncles, anything? Or is that just her thing?
She has an older brother, my uncle, who's I think like 12 years older. And he had a bike at one point, but he's more just like, he's a musician. Mm-hmm. But my grandfather was like World War II vet. Like police officer. Yeah. He was like NYPD for like 37 years. Okay. Like he was, but he was also weirdly enough, like the most loving, like, you know, for a guy who was in World War II, for a guy who did all that shit, he was the most like, he always said, I love you. He was very affectionate. It was crazy. It was like the opposite. You would give him every excuse. He was born in 1920. It's like, you give him every excuse to be like, you know, a racist or like a hardened, not emotional guy. And he was, to his credit, he was the best.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So mom's hanging out in biker bars, not because that's where she can get away with taking her kid, but she also is of that. Those are her people.
She was that ilk. Yeah.
And was your dad also in that world?
They grew up a block. They grew up two blocks away from one another. And my dad's best friend introduced them. And weirdly enough, my dad lived on Deb Street, which is a very... Nah. Yeah, yeah, very strange. But
looked like it turned out to be a dead end street. Yeah, guy at all. Yeah.
So they were like, you know, they were. I guess they would party. I guess and you know before they had me or something. But then I think it was again just that different ideas of like once we had the kid, like let's be you know a more you know traditional household and you know and my dad.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one: download Rocket Money. Step two. Link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I would try to be like, let's take them to church and everything. But then like the second I was Catholic the second
your
we got.
Your mom taking him to the church or Harley Davidson.
My mom did not go to church with us. She would stay back and like make breakfast so that when we came back and everything. But
so
like,
just you and your dad would go?
Yeah, I think my mom went the first few times and then was like, I'm not making it.
Do you remember, because kids are smart, do you remember at early age, like maybe it was wrong, or whether it was wrong or not, like, was hanging out with mom more fun than hanging out with dad?
For sure. Because dad was like more of a disciplinarian. Yeah. Like, he wasn't, I don't even think my dad believes in God. I think he just was kind of like, this is what you're supposed to do. You know, especially coming from an Irish Catholic family, you got to go to church. And the second I like got my confirmation, we literally never went ever again. That was like the last day we ever went.
So did you get that documentation, bro? It's like, and we're the fuck out of here.
Exactly. So it was just,
I graduated. Yeah. Never coming back.
So I think there was like constant fighting about like, you know, like that kind of a situation. We would come home. It would be probably like, I don't know. It would be way past a bedtime for a child on a school night.
With your mom.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We'd like come back and my mom would have to be like, you know, the prepping in the car of like, we don't have to like say where we were, you know, like that kind of a little
bit
of
But isn't she always at the same spot?
Essentially, yeah. So, which again, it just became kind of like a contentious thing. And then they would always fight about that, which, you know, looking back on it, you're like, I think my dad had pretty good claims, you know, for being angry and stuff like that. So it was like, that was for sure a constant source of fighting for them, because then my mom felt like she was being turned into just like a house mom kind of a thing. And I don't know, all this other stuff, but she also had jobs too. She worked in like nail salon. She had bought a nail and hair salon like 6 months before she got pregnant with me. And then that was like, well, I can't do this. And then she just worked in nail salons my whole life, which was great. I always got free haircuts, you know, and stuff like that at the hair salon. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you do.
Thanks, dude.
Good head of lettuce.
And I would like sweep up hair and like, you know, I would also make terrible prank phone calls using that thing when I got older and stuff. It was
So just entertaining yourself while this is going on.
Yeah, the only child thing, man. You know, it's like all my neighbors had like 5 kids. So I was always like that kid who was, you know, I would hang out with them. Then they would go back home and continue playing. And I would be like, ah, shit. So I'd do my own, you know, it's where you get an imagination, I guess, if you're an only child. But one time I was at my mom's hair salon. And again, I was young. I don't remember how old, but definitely like 10 or under. And there was a phone in the back, like an old rotary phone. And I just was like, here's a fun prank. And I'll just call 911. And then I called 911 and then they answered and I hung up. And then I was like, that was kind of fun. And then I picked up the phone and I called 911 again. And then I hung up and I was like, that was a fun bit for just me. And then I just kept going about my business. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, 2 police cars come up. And because they think like a hostage situation is happening. You know what I mean? There's like multiple calls with a click. You know what I mean?
I didn't even see that.
So they're like, something terrible is happening. So they send police and the cops come in and they're like, what's going on? And now the whole, you know, there's like a busy hair salon. There's like plenty. And everyone's like, who called 911? Who called 911? And I'm having that moment of like, I'm going to be in so much trouble. I'm going to have to admit it's me. And then there was a mother there with like her like kids that were a little bit younger than me. And they were kind of being like a terror. And she was like, it was probably my kids. I'm so sorry. And like, these kids got in so much trouble. Like, man,
like, you just in the
we're
back
never
sweeping,
coming here like, again. Yeah, I'm like, it wouldn't be the kid sweeping hair. That kid's the most innocent of boys, you know?
And
I got away with that. But yeah, it was.
So when your parents split, do they stay close in proximity? Are you bouncing back and forth? Are you primarily with mom or dad? How's
that
work?
I was with mom. My great uncle had just died and he lived probably like a half hour away. So my dad moved there. So I was doing that for a couple years. And then my dad eventually moved to New York City. So then I was just taking the train into New York City every week.
And how old? How old did you start doing that?
Probably like 14, I guess, maybe, or something like that. And then up and through, you know, up until, you know, he lived there for 20 years in the east side of Manhattan. So that was cool, though. It felt cool to like take the train into the city and all that other stuff. Like, it was a very like exciting, you know, exciting time to be like a Long Island could be like, I'm going into the city every week, you know.
And did your mom remarry or?
They both got, my dad's remarried. My mom got re-engaged. Everyone's always like, when's the wedding? Why don't you have a date? And she's like, I'm never getting married again. And they go, why? And her exact line is, I already have the rock. Where is he going? Where you're like, all right.
Where does he go?
Where would he go? You know, where does he got to go? Let him find something better. And you're like, okay, you know? Which works for me because then if she dies, the money comes to me and not to, you know, poor Jeff. But it's interesting.
It is. I think about it all the time. it's just this, it's so funny. I had an Uber driver bring it up to me, marriage, and it's just this archaic contract. Like if anyone outside of marriage, if this was a business contract, we go, look, man, if this thing goes great, this is going to be amazing.
Right.
But if you fuck up, or even if they fuck up, you could lose this and this and this and this. You would fucking say, if it was a business proposal, most people I feel like would go, It's too much risk.
It's a 60% chance of failure.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You start throwing stats on top of it too.
I was never the guy.
Goldie and Kurt did it right, man.
Yeah,
they did.
Dude, I'm not.
They did it right.
Just be like partners and you know, share a life.
Just
like
all you, they have everything that everyone else does except for paperwork.
Right.
Even if they are legally whatever now, I know common law, whatever, but still.
Yeah.
There's no state involvement.
There's certain things, you know, though.
The government doesn't need to be involved in your wedding.
Yeah, but there's other things where you're like access to health insurance and like, you know, power of attorney if I'm a vegetable. You know what I mean? There are those things where you're like, it'd be nice to have somebody. I never saw myself getting married, especially coming from divorce. I was like, I would never be like the, and then I just, you know, you meet the right person and whatever. And I met her early, you know, in college, like in my freshman year of college, I ended up meeting her and we're still together now and it's great. But I think my grandparents are like, my grandfather was a police officer and my grandmother, they're married 67 years. It's like, that's like the people that I look to be like, that's the
67 years.
Their story is like, I have to like write a movie about
Tell
it at some point. They're just kind of like this, the Notebook-esque sort of thing where they were,
this is the same grandfather who fought World War II.
Yeah. So he was born in 1920. She was a little bit younger than that. And they met and they would hang out in the neighborhood. My grandmother was like obsessed with him. He was like a little bit older. So, and then, you know, they would hang out in Flushing and College Point, Queens. And, you know, just so poor. They were both so, it was like depression. They had nothing, you know. And then my grandfather's brother, World War II starts. My grandfather's brother gets drafted into the war. My grandfather didn't get drafted, but he's like, I'm gonna go sign up. So he wanted to go to the Navy, I think he wanted. So he went into New York City, took the police test so that way he's like,
you did not get drafted.
He hadn't got drafted yet. I mean, maybe he might have.
So he was going and just said, I'm gonna go where I wanna go instead of being placed.
Yeah. He was just like, I gotta do my duty. My brother's going, I'm going. Mm-hmm. So he went into New York City to take the police test so he'd have a job when he comes back. And like one of the physical tests was like the hurdles. And on like the first hurdle, he like clipped his foot and then like landed directly on his knee and then had to do the rest of the test. So his knee was like blowing up. So he got done with the test. He's in Manhattan. He gets out. He's like limping around. And he says to like a person walking the street, he's like, where is the Navy recruitment center? And they were like, oh, it's like 15 blocks right this way. And then you make a left. And he was like, okay. He's like, and where is the Army recruitment center? And they were like, oh, it's like across the street. And then he went there. And so he just so he just signed up for the Army.
He's like, we're an Army.
Yeah, we're going to the Army. So he did like 52 missions across. He was flying. Yeah, he was at like this giant, like, you know, those giant bomber planes and stuff like that. He did. And even when they came back, you know, he was so poor, which now becomes like a beautiful thing, but they were so poor that my grandmother's wedding dress was made out of my grandfather's parachute from the war, like his silk parachute. And then she actually still fit in it for their 65th wedding anniversary.
No way.
It was crazy. Yeah.
That is nuts.
Yeah. And then he worked.
Where's that dress right now?
It's probably at my mom's house down in Florida.
Debbie's got that?
Yeah, Debbie's got it.
They're not out there fucking tying it on her back and going wheelies and shit with a cape on.
Watch this. <you know? laughs>
Look at grandma's dress in the wind.
Yeah, it was crazy, dude. But, you know, and then he worked, like I said, 37 years, NYPD, two kids, you know, light, and they just were like, they're the cutest couple you've ever seen in your life. They just were always, you know, very fun and laughing a lot together. So they were a good beacon of like, love can be a thing, you know? I don't know.
Liquid IV, the number one powered hydration brand in America, is now available in sugar-free. Years in the making, Hydration Multiplier Sugar-Free uses a proprietary zero-sugar hydration solution with no artificial sweeteners. They've got tons of great flavors and even some new ones like white peach and sea berry. The travel packs make it easy to use daily, even when I'm on the road. One stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you 2 times faster and more efficiently than water alone. Liquid IV combines science-backed zero-sugar technology with the brand's commitment to delicious, real flavor. No artificial sweeteners and zero sugar with a proprietary amino acid allulose blend for a sweet taste without the calories or raised blood glucose levels you get from sugar. Contains 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness with 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks. Plus, it's non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. Real people, real flavor, real hydrating. Now sugar-free. Grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code HONEYDEW at checkout. And that's 20% off of anything you order when you use promo code HONEYDEW at liquidiv.com. The hair care products that you use can make or break your hair health. Overwashing, color treating, heat styling, and product usage can clog the scalp's pores or cause dryness, leading to a poor environment for hair growth. While Nutrafol's hair growth supplements target the root causes of thinning hair from within, Nutrafol's scalp care formulas help create a healthy environment for improved hair quality. The shampoo, scalp mask, and scalp essence are each gentle yet effective, and they work to exfoliate, purify, and balance the scalp for improved hair health. Nutrafol supplements are the foundation for healthy hair growth, while the scalp care products create an environment for hair to thrive. With just a simple daily routine, these formulas set you up for the healthiest hair yet. Take the first step toward improved hair and scalp health now. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our U.S. listeners $10 off your first scalp care order when you go to Nutrafol.com/scalp and enter promo code HONEYDEW. Find out why over 4,000 healthcare professionals recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com/scalp and enter promo code HONEYDEW for $10 off your first scalp care order. This is available only to U.S. customers for a limited time. That's Nutrafol.com/scalp. Promo code HONEYDEW for $10 off your first scalp care order. Now, let's get back to the do. Another thing we were talking about before we recorded, you mentioned you had some surgeries and stuff, and I wanted to talk to you about that because you said you've had quite a bit.
Yeah.
Go back to the beginning and tell us what happened. Dude. What happened? Are you like born with health issues?
The thing that I was born with was I had it's called pectus excavatum, which is basically like a concave chest. Like my chest almost looked like a dented in ping pong ball.
I knew a kid in high school that had that.
Yeah. It's so funny because my best friend in elementary school.
I didn't know
school,
it had a name.
Yeah. My best friend in L. Yeah. We just called him
like,
weirdo.
What the fuck's up with your chest?
Yeah. 100%. Well, it's so weird because my best friend as a kid also had it. So I thought like it was
really?
Way more con- he lived a block from me. So I was like, I thought like most
you know,
kids
it's like two and a million and you two happen to live.
Exactly,
here.
Dude. So like, you know, obviously
you guys go to the same clinic.
Yeah. Shit. So obviously, like as a kid, like that was a pretty big source of like you know, self-consciousness and being like, you know, in public, my family would tell me, we'd be at the pool or at the beach or something. I'd always kind of be like, you know, I think I would be like pretending I was cold to kind of like cover my chest and stuff like that. And then there was a surgery they used to do back when I was a kid where they would literally like cut you from like your the top of your chest all the way to your belly button, like almost like butterfly you open, break your ribs and like
Jesus
reconstruct
Christ.
It was like this barbaric crazy thing. So my family, thank God, never got that for me when I was young. And then when I became like
is it something they knew when you were born, or did it just over time when you started growing they could see it was growing differently?
They knew I had it when I was born, and then it was getting like it was starting to get like worse when I was, because I would get headaches like every day.
This is what I want to ask you. So is this a surgery that you absolutely have? Will it end up pushing in on lungs?
Yeah, they said it could eventually like go like push onto my heart like at some point in my
Jesus.
life. So it was like, you know, so when I was like 15, they came out with this other like brand new revolutionary surgery in Norfolk, Virginia, where basically this guy like he created this like stainless steel bar that he just, you do a slice on the side of your rib, and they basically put this bar in, and then they just kind of turn it so it just pops the chest out, and then you keep the stainless steel bar in your chest.
Both sides?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have it. It's like, yeah, it's just like a straight across, and they keep it. They keep it in your chest for 3 years.
You had this?
I had this. So I got it when I was 16. And I went and got this surgery, and then you get this stainless steel bar, and it pops the chest out, and then
look normal from here.
Yeah, it's good now. It's a good time, you know. Like I feel like I honestly forget that was ever like a whole part of my life. You know what I mean?
You ever just like dump milk down and just let it just splash?
Dude, when I had like a hole like a thing down here, dude, I'd put like popcorn in there when I was a kid. It was like a little bowl, you know, like
M&M.
Yeah, 100%, man. It was for sure. It's like a straw, a little. Pull it up. So I got this surgery. I got this surgery at 16. I had to keep this bar in my chest for 3 years till you stop growing. So you're like after 18.
And how does that affect your life? Can you play sports?
No, that's where it affects my life. It's first off, you have a bar in your chest that you feel. Laying on my side. It felt weird.
And shit?
I mean, like probably not, but it felt like it.
It you ever
feels
hit it?
Like it was. Yeah, dude. Oh, for sure. Like if you would hit it, it would like really. Waking up from that surgery was like pretty, in terms of like pain level, it was like one of the worst. Like some guys though get it so bad that they have to get two bars because they're like taller and stuff, which is even brutal. But I got this one because I was getting headaches every day of my life, every day. And they said it was because I had a lack of oxygen from being able to like get full lung capacity from the chest. So I get this surgery. And because of that, they're like, you can't do football. I mean, this was always my frame anyway, but like you can't do football. You can't do like hard contact, like sports or anything
MMA,
like that.
No MMA,
none of that stuff. So I did like track and field and like crew. It was like rowing and stuff like that. So I did those things, but like I never really enjoyed that. You know, I always wanted to do like baseball.
It's like fucking braces for your ribs.
Yeah, inside. It's so straight, you know, and it's like, so that was obviously like a whole story. And then after my freshman year of college, in between freshman year and sophomore year, I had to go get the bar removed, which
what
is
like, that? How's that work?
They put you out, I assume, like you wouldn't even know, dude. I have like two little scars. They just literally like, yeah, they just pull it.
Isn't it, isn't bone around it though?
You'd think so.
It came out that easy? Were you awake?
No, God,
okay,
no.
All
God,
right, yeah, I was going to say.
Screaming, no.
Looking at sword,
like taking the biggest splinter out of the inside of your body. So I had that done. So that was obviously the most serious of the surgeries that I had because that was like a major, you know, reconstructive surgery. And then when I was like, whatever year, however old, when I was like 2001 or something, I think around that time, I had appendicitis, which was like a crazy night because I was like I was with my dad that weekend. He had taken me, this is when he was still living in Long Island, so it was before he moved to the city, but we went into the city to go see a concert. We went to BB King's the venue. Mm-hmm. And we saw John Entwistle of The Who. And this was actually his last concert before he died, and he was completely deaf at that point.
Is that
from,
right?
From
I didn't
all
know
of
that.
The years of the, you know, and all the play. So he was completely deaf. And it was the loudest concert I've ever, because he has no idea how loud. It was the loudest concert I've ever been to in my life. And then we were coming back. It was just like this whole crazy day where like I'm like starting to be in pain. We're driving back to Long Island. There's so much traffic. So then my dad, it's literally bumper to bumper. So my dad's like, I'm gonna go off the on-ramp just to like get out of this. And like a bunch of cars were doing it. And then like,
the holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
100 cars must have taken that on-ramp off. And then like the police came and gave like my dad a ticket and then gave like the next 5 cars tickets. So we got tickets. So that slowed us down even more. So then my dad's pissed. We stop at a gas station and my dad like moved. He like went to reverse his car and he backed his car into a like ninja motorcycle. And
Debbie's then, people.
Well, she's more the Harley. Yeah, she's the, yeah, but this is right, like the, these people, yeah. You know? And he knocked the guy's bike over and then it got like caught under his car. So my dad went to like move forward and was just dragging this dude's bike. And this guy who like he dressed
was he
like,
there? Did he see it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. This guy was like a probably 20 something, like just like black RoboCop. Like the way he was dressed and like the whole thing, dude. And he went up to my dad's window and like just fucking was bashing the back of my dad's car where like all of the, you know, it's spiderweb, yeah. The whole back window. We had this old like Toyota Celica. So it was like almost that hatchback kind of thing. Bash that. And then him and my dad are like screaming at each other. I think my dad's going to get killed. I'm like freaking, I'm like crying. I'm screaming. I don't know what's going on. So then we have to fill out the police report with all that. So it's like now it's like 1 or 2 in the morning. It's like the longest night ever. And I'm like, again, my stomach is killing me this whole time. We like go over the bump to get out of the gas station, and like the second we hit, like the whole back windshield falls into the car. Like 8 million pieces of glass. My dad's pissed, you know, just the worst day ever. And his son won't stop fucking complaining about his stomach for some reason. Yeah, yeah. And then I woke, and then like an hour later, I was like, my dad was just like, "This, we got to go to the hospital." And immediately they're like, "You got to get, you know, surgery and stuff." So then I had the appendicitis, which was fine. You know, it's whatever. I mean, all compared to other surgeries I've had, it was fine. And then since then, I've also had 3 different shoulder surgeries.
Why? What's going on with the
shoulder? Well, I tore a labrum and I tore, like, I think playing basketball or bench pressing, and I had it torn for 4 years. So it was just constantly, I couldn't lift my arm like over this for years. And I just figured that was just my way of life. Got the labrum surgery, that fixed it. Then like a year later, the labrum started fraying again. But then they realized, because I did an MRI.
Is this all a result of what happened in your chest originally? Is this like?
No, but this part is actually kind of a weird oddity thing as well, is that they found out the reason I've been having shoulder problems, because inside the ball of my shoulder, like in the solid bone where it's supposed to be solid, was completely hollow. There was like a cyst inside the bone.
Oh.
So my shoulder's been like weak my whole life, which has caused all of the other compensating and issues for it and stuff like that. So they did 2 surgeries at once where they went in, drilled into the bone, took out the cyst, replaced it with donor bone so it would make it a solid bone. And then while that surgeon was done, the other surgeon tagged in, fixed up the labrum, shaved down the collarbone, all that other stuff, and then did that. And that was like the last one I had was during COVID. It was like 2021 or something, where it was like I was alone in the hospital, all that other shit.
How long were you in there?
I was just there for the day. But like what's crazy is you weren't allowed to have family or friends in there with you. And I was, you know, they make you not eat for so long beforehand. And I don't love needles, but I'm like okay with them. But this woman came over and she was like the nurse. And I gave her my hand to put the IV in. I'm fucking, I know this game by now, you know? And she was like, "I'm actually going to put the IV in your wrist." And I was like, "The wrist? Why?"
There's always that one that wants to experiment.
Yeah. And I'm like, "Look how veiny my hand." I'm like, they're right here. It's cool.
There's no reason.
And she's like, I mean, just like stabbing my wrist, just not finding a vein. It's just over and over again. And then she finally got it in and I was like, okay. And then she was like, "You know what?
Can't bend your wrist."
Yeah. And she was like, "It's not dripping up enough." She's like, "I'm going to take it out. I'm just going to put it in your hand." And I was like, and for some reason, when she was taking it out of my wrist, dude, that I just was like, apparently what I said out loud was like, "Nope, don't like that." And then I just passed out. Just fully swooned. I was like, everything got black. And then, dude, and then I wake up and I think like, I don't know what's happening. You know when you, I don't know if you've ever passed out.
I haven't.
Dude,
I've collapsed and blacked out. But
okay. Yeah. Well, it's
like you wake up, you don't know how long you've been out. It could be 10 seconds or 10 hours.
I thought the surgery was over. That's how confused I was. And the worst part is I wake up from the blacking out and there's like, you know, nurses around me. They got like ice chips on my neck. And I was like, "Oh, whoa, that was like a crazy surgery." And I looked down and they were like, "We had to wait for you to wake back up before putting the IV." They didn't even I still had to go through the whole process of putting the IV in again after that. Where they're like, "Now that you're awake, let's put it back in." I was like, "You guys are monsters, absolute monsters." So But yeah, the surgeries went well. Now it's like I'm the strongest. My shoulder's the strongest it's ever been in my life. Because apparently when you're a kid, you can get some cysts, but they're supposed to go away. But mine, of course, did not. So yeah, dude, it's been a nightmare.
But you've also had a lot of injuries that aren't just from that too. Why?
I don't know. Dude,
daredevil kid?
I was a daredevil kid. I told you, like, I basically had, like, Jackass was, like, such a giant influence in all my whole life. Like, that was right at the perfect
age.
This
is what's interesting to me about that, though, is Jackass is a group effort.
Mm-hmm.
You're a solo kid.
Well, all of my boys, a group effort.
You weren't just around the house by yourself.
No. Okay. But I was always smart in that. I was obsessed with cameras. Like, I always had, like, a camera. Ever since I was a kid, like, I always would be the one filming things. And I was very good at, like, talking my friends into doing Jackass stuff. And they'd be like, well, why don't you fucking do it? I'm like, yeah, but I'm filming it, dude. It's going to be great. And so I always got to, like, all of the ones that were, like, violent or, like, things where it was, like, you know, we're going to just, you know, roll out of a moving car or, like, you know, do the all those. I would just convince them that I'm going to get the best footage of this and convince them to do it. And it was really quite odd. But also we did dumb shit in my car. It's just we did a lot of, like, reckless, all that stuff when they would post that thing on Jackass in the beginning where they're like, warning, don't try this at home. We won't look at submission tapes. Don't even try this. We would see that and we'd be like, I know what they mean. You know what I mean? They just want to see a good one. And that's what they want. I get it. Legally, they got to say it, but, like, they're interested, you know?
What were some of the wildest ones you guys did?
I mean, we would just drive. A lot of it was, like, car-related stuff, man, which wasn't great. But, like, we would drive recklessly. We would also, like, get into fights with motorists, you know what I mean? Like, start fights, you know what I'm saying? Like, we would go to, like, McDonald's and get, like, food, and then we'd be out of, like, a red light with a car, and then, like, the second the light would turn green, we'd just, like, throw the tomato, like, onto their, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, throw a milkshake, just being, like, piece of shit kids and stuff like that, and then, like, most times, people in Long Island, like, they will chase you. They will chase you until you get away, and my buddy was, like, a getaway driver. He would just recklessly blow through red lights, just cutting across lanes and stuff like that. The worst one was we did a fake kidnapping. Yeah. So we were down in Port Jeff outside of a bar that had, like, a line outside of it. And we drove up. We had our friend in the trunk and he was banging on the roof. And we opened it. We were like, shut the fuck up, you know, like, pretended to hit him, and then got back in the car. And people were like, what the fuck? What was that? You know, they're all horrified. And then this other car, I guess, like, this Samaritan, like, person that saw it, started, like, kind of, like, chasing us. So then my buddy goes into his evasive maneuvers, blowing red lights, cutting across double yellow lines, just illegally driving like crazy. And then, like, after, like, 5 minutes of chasing us, they fucking put a light on because it was undercover cops.
Oh, shit.
So they pull us over, draw the guns.
Guns
us.
Are out.
Guns are drawn.
Oh, man, are dude, you shitting
in their
yourself?
Mind, they saw a kidnapping.
Yeah, they really
and now
did.
This guy is illegally driving.
Yeah, you're lucky they're not shooting and asking later.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So they pull the guns on us. They go, get the fuck out of the car. And they do that thing. And we're just trying to explain to them, but they're not listening. You know, we're like 17. We don't know.
Because this is also what every person does when they get pulled over.
Yes.
Telling them they're first. No, you don't understand.
No, we're boys. And they literally do the thing where they go, what's in the trunk? And we have to be like, all right. So, like, it's a guy, but, like, we're boys. And he'll tell you we're boys when you open it. You'll see. And we open it. And my buddy, who's been getting, like, thrown around, you know what I mean, in the trunk, they open it. They're like, are you okay? And he's like, no, they're my friends. And they don't believe him. They think he's like, got the, like,
something.
You know, like, because yeah, we're behind him, like, tell him, you know? Yeah. So he's like, we had to, like, show IDs. We had to show pictures of us, like, from, like, being friends. Like, we had to call his parents.
You had to show, nuh-uh.
So I had to call his parents to be like, is this a real kidnapping? Is this kid just lying and stuff like that? And then
credit to the cops for doing that, at least. Yeah. They could have just been like, yeah, and you guys really could have been fucking that kid up.
Yeah, like the Dahmer situation where they just let that little boy back mm-hmm. go into the thing. But yeah, we somehow, impossibly, as far as I can remember, got away. Like, there was no
guns.
All our parents, like, were called. That was, like, the worst of it, but they didn't do it. They didn't give my friend any tickets for all the speeding that he did and all that other shit. So yeah, man, I mean, just jackasses. We were idiots. Just terrible.
Did anybody ever really get hurt?
My friend had like, he got like his knees fucked up and stuff like that just from like, you know, literally shopping carts, you know, going in those metal great shopping carts, pushing them as hard as you can into a curb and just seeing what happens, that kind of a thing.
We had this.
Also, no. This is just a real, my buddy would, we would go to this, there was this one street in our block that, or in our neighborhood that was like obnoxiously wide for some reason. It was way wider than all of the other streets. And it was like a kind of an in-between street. And we would just do donuts in that. And my buddies and I, but mainly my buddies, because it was my car, would go on the roof of the car.
No.
And no straps, nothing. Just hold on to the roof.
Lay or like squat hold? Are you like Spider-Man or are you like laying down?
No, they're like laying. They're laying down. But we're doing donuts and they're just holding on to it. And like one of us, you know, we probably like we're grabbing his ankle from inside the car or something, but like just almost in an effort to like, let's see if we can throw him from the top of this car onto the concrete. And shockingly, nobody, like it was one of those things where it was like the only time someone fell was like right as we were stopping and they kind of just rolled off. But I mean, easily could have been killed.
Dead.
Any of us.
Dead.
Dead. Dead.
I don't know how anybody makes it past 16.
We were reckless.
We used to have this bridge. It was on the 32, Route 32, and it was 100 feet from the top. So there were rafters under it. There were about 50.
Yeah.
And then the top was 100. We took a tape measure, measured it. And when you're swimming under it and you look up, it doesn't look that bad.
Yeah.
It's up there. But when you get up there, and you look over and the first thing you see are like leaves or something floating on the water top. So it gives you a perspective.
You're
like,
right.
Holy fuck. So people started to want to jump off of it. And it became this like after school thing. People would go down to watch people do it. Other people would swear they're going to do it. And we had known a rival school. It's called South Carroll for us. We were Liberty there, South Carroll. And one of the kids there, I think they were doing night swimming and he jumped. And apparently there's a cable or something way down there. And I guess his foot got stuck and he never came up. So we would only do it during the day. Yeah, he died.
Oh, shit.
We would only do this during the day. And we would only do it if we would have six or seven people swimming out in the water. So if you came down, they would dive down right away to be there at least to try to help you. There were people that would wait up in the rafters and jump in if you needed more help. Because that wasn't that high. 50 feet's not that bad, you know?
It's bad. Yeah, it's tough.
But 100 is stupid.
100 is insane.
And so we had this one, we're still friends this day. This one kid, Chris Sheeler, was always like, you know, I'm going to do it. I mean, you ain't going to fucking do it. He's like, I'm going to do it. Every day he's going to do it and he never does it. So one day I go, you know what? If you do it, I'll do it. And he's like, are you serious? I go, yes, because you're not going to fucking do it.
Right.
So we walk up, we get on, and a guy comes up with us to make sure that if he goes, I go. And I said, you don't need to make sure. If he goes, I'm going, but he's not going.
Right.
And we're up there for 20 fucking minutes. And cars, they're riding by, you know? And I'm like, you're not doing it. So I turn around, and I just hear this noise. I just hear a whoo. And I turn back around, and he is fucking gone. And I look over and this motherfucker's screaming, going down.
My God. No. 100 feet, dude.
He did it. And he went in and he came up screaming, like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, no.
No pain? No, didn't get hurt?
No. Well, some people certainly did. So I'll tell you what happened. So I had to do it. And it took me a while. I got out over the edge and I held back and I kept letting go. You know, I just kept waiting for the miss. And I wasn't missing.
Yeah.
I was not missing. And then I let go and I pin dropped in and man, the water, maybe the first 8 feet is warm. It's sun beating right on.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, you go down deep. It's pitch black. It's fucking cold down there. So I panic, you know, I panic, swim back up and I'm all stoked that I did it. And I get out and the next day in school, my ass.
Yeah.
And the bottoms of my fucking feet.
Uh-huh. From slapping that hard.
Man. Fucking hurt so bad. I couldn't sit in my chair comfortably or whatever. A girl went up and did it, didn't close her legs. She got her vagina torn and had to go to the ER because she got a tear.
Torn,
bro. Oh. It's 100 feet up. You can't be going down reckless with your legs open.
No.
You got to be tight.
Yeah. She's just riding a bull. Dude, get out of here.
My brother, he's an idiot. So he decided that jumping wasn't enough anymore. Sure. Now somebody's got a jackass, you know? And they were trying to flip off. And my brother made the mistake of, he got scared, but instead of flipping straight out, he sort of went off to that flip where you go this way, you know, that I'm not fully committed shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The panic flip.
And he went wildly coming down. He slapped on his ribs. He came up. We have it on video. Somebody still has that somewhere on VHS.
Oh, my God.
And he was spitting up blood for like a day.
Did he go to the hospital?
No.
Sick.
That's what I'm saying. He's that idiot. He's like,
just
no.
Classic. Just
if it lasts more than a day, I'll do it. And he didn't.
Dude, I the only thing I jumped off a 62-foot cliff in Hawaii once, and I was watching. It's just a jutted out into the ocean kind of a thing. And it was like a long swim. It would be like a long swim back. It was like a few, and it was like a pretty strong, it was in Kauai. It was like a very strong current. You had to be a really strong swimmer. And I was-
That's the thing we didn't have. This was just lake dead water,
yeah,
you know?
This was like strong current. So I'm like pretty nervous about it. I'm like worried about, is it even deep enough? Are there rocks here? And I saw like local, like Hawaiian dudes, like literally like-
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Not even break stride from climbing up this thing and then just do three front flips and land and then just swim and go. And I, yeah, dude, I was up there for probably 30 to 35 minutes by myself, just being like, I'm gonna do. And people are like hiking past me being like, are you jumping?
They've circled around. You still here, Mike?
Literally, someone did. Someone went, I can't believe you're still here. And they go, it was this old couple that finally gave me the courage.
Because
I was
like, an old guy.
Well, that was the other thing, too, because I'm like, one of the times I'm not making this up, dude. One of the times I was about to jump, I had like my legs were bent. I looked down and where I was planning on jumping was a fucking sea turtle, like at the top. And I'm like, if I landed on a, it just shattered everything, you know? So I told this old couple who had just...
Yeah,
had
that been, dinosaur ain't even gonna budge. What fly just hit me?
Yeah, and I'm just melted. And so I tell this older couple that saw me go by, and I was like, just can you, like, if I just, you know, make sure that I come up, you know, and if not, go tell somebody. Because my wife was like at the pool, you know what I mean? She was like, nowhere was near.
Yeah, right.
So I finally jumped off, and dude, I did like the running, kind of like running bicycle thing, and... The other thing, dude, I'm sure you experienced too, you just never, you're falling for so long. I can't even imagine 100 feet, 62 feet. I was falling and then you're like gaining speed as it's going.
And you're well aware of how fast you're hauling
it's,
ass.
It's getting faster and like, faster. And you're like, why haven't I hit the water yet? You know? And then when I hit, I was like, I think I was like in between running because I landed on like my ass and thigh. And like you said, dude, I, for the rest of that trip, I had my whole back of my leg was completely bruised. It felt like a slap. I couldn't sit down. It was none of that. So I totally relate to what you're saying, but I can't imagine that 100 feet. And then I found out that same cliff, I found this out afterwards, that same cliff Justin Bieber had jumped off of and it blew out his eardrum.
Jesus.
So he had to like cancel his entire tour. It was like a notorious, like, don't do this cliff.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So I ended up, had I known that, I probably wouldn't have.
I've told this story before and a long time ago, probably on the crab feast and people call bullshit. But I called my younger brother after I told him, and I go, people don't believe that fucking story. So off to the side of that bridge, you got the bridge about 100, and then there's a cliff off to the side, to the left. And what we used to do is take our swimming masks and stuff, and we'd all swim the bottom and make sure there were no rocks under there because it's obviously not clear water or anything. And everybody would be like, this is a good spot to go. And then there was just a place we called The Rock, and it was just a little, you know, 10-foot jump off and just hang out. People are drinking, smoking, whatever. But this was just off – so some people are jumping off the bridge here, and then you just come down here for the people that were not as – stupid.
Right.
And wanted to do something a little less dumb. And we always would play fucking dumb, like, oh, you know, Jaws, is something's pulling you under, right, somebody go out. And we'd always yell snake, snake, or whatever. And one time, my fucking brother jumps in, and he's out there swimming. And we look out, and there's a fucking water moccasin that's hauling ass, right, coming right at him.
Yeah.
In the water, a snake. And we're screaming, snake, snake. But we've yelled snake so many fucking
Boy
times.
Boy cried wolf.
Exactly. He doesn't even pay. He said, whatever. We're like, we're all doing it. We're throwing rocks. He's like, stop. He turns around. This motherfucker's like, yeah. He's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
He starts swimming. I'm like, I don't think he's going to fucking make it. My friend, this true story, Jeff Wagner, he was like, this is like late neighborhood legend shit. He was the guy, the, you know, best player in baseball. Sure. He went to the University of Maryland. He was really fucking good. This kid takes one of those flat, like, shale rocks, and he fucking throws it. And I promise you, Mike fucking Feeney, it cut that goddamn snake.
No way.
I'm telling you.
I was just saying, like, if you had said he just hit it, I'd be like, that's crazy.
Cut it in half, and it broke like this. And then it slowly floated like this. And we were like, get the fuck. We're going nuts. I called my brother after I told that story because people are like, you're full of shit. I'm like, Todd, they don't fucking believe. He's like, Wagner threw that rock and cut the snake in half. I go, in half. It cut in half. He goes, it cut it in half. I was like,
oh, my God. You actually weirdly just reminded me of a near-death experience that I had that I've forgotten about to tell you about that I might have blacked out on purpose. This was in between one of my years of college. It's probably after my freshman year of college when my mom moved to Florida at that point. So she's, I would work at a surf shop during the day, right on the beach, and I would go surfing like all the time. Right. So one of the first times I went, like literally the first time, it was like New Smyrna Beach, which is kind of like a great surfing beach on the east coast of Florida. Also the shark bite capital of the world.
It is?
Sure, yeah. And not, they have like,
that's the East Coast?
Yeah. It's like 6 foot, not deaths, like bites. They have sand sharks, all these six foot, yeah, okay, whatever, sharks that come in. So they get, people get bit, then they go to like get stitched up, go right back out surfing. It's like, so that's like the notion I'm having going into this. So I'm starting to paddle out. I'm kind of near the jetties, you know, where like the surf point is. I'm starting to paddle out, and then suddenly I see, as I'm paddling, I'm getting closer, like the current taking me closer to the jetties. So I was like, oh, that's not good. So I turned my board to paddle away from the jetties, and the current, I mean, within, it felt like seconds, took me out past the jetties and on the other side of it, which was,
oh, you went around,
just open ocean. There's like no beach. There's no nothing. It's just, I'm gone. And like,
I want to say, not to interrupt you, but there's a place in Ocean City, Maryland, they call it the Inlet, and it's where the bayside meets the ocean, where they literally touch at the end of that.
Right.
And it's okay over here, and if you go over there, it's madness. Just,
you're by yourself. Yeah. So I'm like, and like, the beach is packed, and seemingly nobody is seeing me drift away. And I'm starting to do that thing of like, I was a lifeguard, so I'm like, I'm a great swimmer. So I'm kind of swimming, I'm panicking a little bit, but I'm like, it's okay. And everyone's just getting further and further away. I'm kind of like waving to people. No one's doing anything. I get onto that other side of the jetties. Now I'm just in open ocean. No one can even see me anymore. So I'm freaking out. So I go, I'm losing ground on this board. So I'm going to jump off and I'll swim. So I jump off and I start trying to swim. And I'm like really swimming hard and I'm not gaining or losing ground. Like I'm just in place essentially and I'm starting to get tired. And now I'm like really starting to freak out. And
how long do you think you're out there at this point?
I must have been out there like alone, probably like at least like 15 minutes.
Damn.
Well, yeah, like of just being like alone.
Are you trying to signal for anything?
The only people that I could still see were, there were like some older Asian fishermen that were on like the jetties of the rocks. They're not even facing my direction though. They're just kind of like, you know, reeling stuff. And so I'm like panicking, dude. And again, keeping in mind shark bite capital, all alone, looking like a seal, you know what I mean? Like just not good. So then I realized, I remembered from being a lifeguard, like that, you know, doing like the backstroke is a lot less effort than doing the front stroke. So I start doing the backstroke and I'm actually like gaining a little bit of ground, but I'm still like working my ass off. So I backstroke for at least, I don't know, another 5 to 10 minutes. And I finally got towards the other side of the jetties. And one of those Asian fishermen like saw me and like scaled down the thing into the and like brought me back up as I'm getting I'm getting like crashed into the rocks, dude. My board is all like in pieces, ding, and it's all sharp rocks. So I'm like, I'm bleeding, which again, now the blood with the sharks, getting like every day he's like trying to reach me and then the current would smash me into the rocks and my elbow's cut, everything's cut. Like I'm just getting annihilated by these waves and this one guy and then the board leash is stuck to the thing and my board was all broken anyway and the guy was like yelling at me, he's like, just leave the fucking board. Yeah. So I was like, all right, so I like left the board out and then I, you know, he got me back up, I'm all bloody and stuff, and I go over to my family and like friends that are at the beach with me and I'm like, hey, what the fuck? What the fuck, guys? Like, they're all like, what's up? And I'm like, look at me. Where's my board? I'm like, you didn't see me? I was out there. And they're like, we thought that was you. And to be fair, like, it was every white guy, like, with the surfboard. They're like, we thought that guy was you.
That guy.
And then, like, friends are just, like, drinking a beer on the beach as I'm just about to, I mean, it's just, it was terrifying, dude. It was, to be in that ocean, like, that side of it, I had that, like, okay.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it was so long. And, yeah, man, it was a very terrifying experience, dude. I've had a couple of those in my life where it's like you can't communicate when you're going through that panic and you just need somebody to pay attention. Like, this is completely unrelated to that, but it is the similar thing where I didn't like learn how to ride a bike until I was way too old, you know? Like,
what's way too old?
I asked my dad before I came to do this. I was like, what's the age on that? We ballparked it somewhere between 10 or 12, but closer to like 12.
yeah, that's
but
late.
It's too old, dude.
That's way too old.
Because it's embarrassingly old because the first time I went to ride a bike, my dad put training wheels on. And as I was riding around the block with my neighborhood, the training wheel flew off. And I went into the street, almost got hit by a car. So it freaked me out. So I wouldn't go for years. So what I was doing was I was on like the big wheelie. You remember that? It's like the tricycle mm-hmm. with like plastic tires and all that stuff. And I would try to like keep up with my friends were riding bikes at this point. I'm on like on a scooter, you know, I'm like trying to like keep up with them and stuff. And my next door neighbor, Stephanie, she was awesome. She was like 5 years older than me or maybe a little bit less, but she was older than me and she was deaf. And she would ride, she'd be on a mountain bike. I was still on this big wheelie, these plastic tricycle things.
Yeah,
so,
with the power brake back then.
So I came up with this great idea because I can never keep up with her because she was on a mountain bike. And I was like, here's what we'll do. Let's tie my big wheelie to your mountain bike. And then you just kind of take off and I'll like be going as fast. This will be sick, you know? And so we tie it up. And then I sit down in the big wheelie. And before I can grab this, because we tied it to the middle of the steering column. The second, before I could grab the steering column, she just takes off. And it turned the steering column sideways into my chest, like locking me in place.
And we know and now, about that chest,
and
bro.
We know about that. It was right in the hole.
Yeah.
Right in
the, it's holding it in there.
It's probably, yeah.
No hands.
Yeah. But the tire was turned sideways.
Right, yeah.
So it could only,
pushing like
so it was like that. Yeah. And she was like grinding it. And so it just flipped me over with only my elbows and knees being dragged on the concrete on a sidewalk. Yeah. So now I'm like just, I'm losing. And this is the point where you, as a kid, you're like, that was a fucking dumb idea, but not a problem. We'll just yell out to Stephanie. God damn it. She's deaf. She can't hear anything. And dude, she pedaled for like a full two houses. Before turning around,
standing up, I'm there.
Yeah, she's like, you know, and she is hauling it, and I am just like, elbows and knees. I don't know if you can see, like, I have scars on my elbows, dude. Like just being dragged on my elbows and knees by a deaf girl. And she turned around, like, being like, and just
loving them.
Blood. Just blood lined street and a child screaming for his life, dude.
Oh, it hurts my stomach, dude.
Yeah, well, it hurt my elbows and knees.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, Mike Fiend, this has been a fun, really fun fucking episode.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
man.
Dude, thank you for coming in. And I told you before we were recording, your first time here. So after everything we've talked about, tell me advice you would give to 16-year-old Mike Fiend.
Man, I mean, at this point, you know, the bad part is like with the business part of comedy, I'd be like, start a YouTube page immediately and get, because I was always shooting like, you know, dumb little sketches, jackass type things. I was like, man, if I was putting those online when I was 16, I mean, sure, it would have been pretty bad at this point, but at least like that thing. But in terms of just like personal advice, it's like that kind of like the, don't freak out about the future. Like things are going to work out. Like don't stress about, you know, that kind of that dumb, like everything happens for a reason or wherever you're always at where you're supposed to be at kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so many times I've like, you know, I do that. What was the thing you said outside of future? What was
tripping?
Future tripping. I do that a lot. So there's always that like, well, if I do this, like, especially before we had the kid, we're like, yeah, but then if I do this, then it's like, I'm already so busy with stand-up, so then how am I going to add this kid? And then it's like, and then what does that mean? Now we can't fit in this apartment, so now we got to move to another, you know, and you go down that whole thing, and you're like, you figure it out. You know what I mean? Like,
out.
You just can't, you can't plan for all the variables that are going to come, so it's just like, you'll fucking figure it out, man. It'll be fine, or it won't, but freaking out about it now is not gonna change anything.
That's great advice, dude.
Yeah.
Please plug and promote everything again.
MikeFeeneyComedy.com for tour dates and all that. Link to my first comedy special, Rage Against the Routine, which is on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/MikeFeeneyComedy. At I am Mike Feeney across all social media. Come see me in Chicago at the Den Theater on October 7th and Algonquin Theater September 15th. And check out my podcast, Here's a Scenario, with Mike Cannon and Brennan Sagalow. It's a fun time. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Hell yeah, man.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun, dude.
This was fun. As always, RyanSickler.com. I'm Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Go to YouTube, watch the special, and get your tickets. Come out and see me on the road. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.